This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Ryan LeGrand, President and CEO of the U.S. Grains Council. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Bayer and their vision of health for all, hunger for none. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Ryan LeGrand next. As a leader in the industry, we at Bayer have the opportunity and responsibility to help address the challenges around sustainability and ensure that we can all thrive while using our planet's resources in a sustainable way. Sustainability is an integral part of our operations, and we believe that farmers and agriculture can be a part of the solution to many of the planet's biggest challenges. Whether that's helping growers utilize new technologies to get more out of their land or incentivizing carbon-smart farming practices such as strip or no-till and planting cover crops, we're committed to innovate, grow, and partner with farmers to help shape what's possible and further our vision of health for all, hunger for none. For more on Bayer's sustainability efforts, visit www.bayer.com/en/US/United States Sustainability. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. After an extensive career in the grain industry, Ryan LeGrand joined the U.S. Grains Council in 2015 and ascended the lead of the council following the retirement of Tom Slate. LeGrand says the council's mission of developing markets, enabling trade, and improving lives hasn't changed from its inception in 1960, but the task is becoming much more challenging. He's just back from a visit to the group's Chinese headquarters.
Yeah, I went over there mainly to see our staff. You know, no one had been to that office, to our Beijing office, since November of 2019, which is when I was there last, and we all know what the Chinese went through on the COVID lockdowns and everything. So no one was really able to get over there for a long, long time. And our people were just ready to see somebody, anybody, coming over to see them from our headquarters. And so that was kind of the main part of the mission. But while I was there, I got to meet with several government officials and industry participants to kind of check their pulse and see what they're thinking about trade and politics and all of that. It was very much an interesting trip.
I've heard it said from some who have returned from China that there is a difference in perhaps the way their government receives us and how their industry receives us. Is that a fair assessment?
You know, that may have been the case for others. I received a pretty warm welcome from our sponsor. We have to have a sponsor as an NGO over there. And, you know, we had a great conversation about future prospects for grain trade between the United States and China. And one thing that we talked about the entire time was that agriculture, trade in agriculture, is maybe a lone bright spot in our overall tumultuous relationship between China and the United States. So it's kind of a breath of fresh air for them to see some ag folks, to be able to talk about a positive aspect of the relationship.
Undersecretary Taylor now is leading a trade mission to Japan. That follows the U.S. Grains Council, Illinois Corn, and even Illinois Senator Duckworth's visit there in March. Is the decision on ethanol an opportunity for the U.S., and is that still a mature market for U.S. corn?
Yes, the decision on ethanol is very much an opportunity for us. Just a few years ago, we were not allowed to ship any U.S. ethanol to Japan, and they take everything in the form of ETBE, so it's the old MTBE that we used to use here in the United States, but the methanol is taken out of it and ethanol is substituted to blend in with the tert butyl ether that's to make that combination. And we were not able to get any of our ethanol into that previously. And over the years, the Japanese government has decided to allow more and more U.S. ethanol in that blend, and now we're up to 100% potential market access, where it used to be all Brazil. We would bring the Brazilian ethanol into Houston, blend it into the ETBE, and ship it to Japan. Now that all of that can be U.S. content. And we just saw a record shipment to Japan in the form of ETBE again, but with our content, of 18 million gallons in April. Now, those don't show up in the official trade statistics because, again, it's not going out as straight ethanol, but we know how much is going in that form of ETBE, and that 18 million gallons is the most they've ever taken from us, so it's good to see. Then on the corn front, yeah, it's a mature market. Those buyers have been, you know, buying U.S. corn for decades, and they know what they're getting. And we don't see a whole lot of changes. We're going to have to watch out for competition. Obviously, competition, especially from Brazil, is always getting tougher. And our market share has slipped over the years.
So with regard to ethanol, could this be a game changer?
You know, I don't know about it. When you're looking at total ethanol exports, I'm not sure that it's a game changer to, you know, get us over to over a 2 billion gallon export mark or anything like that. But, you know, that 18 million gallons per month is, you know, what's that, 250 million gallons a year. It's a pretty solid number. And when you look at it across other markets, you know, that would place them in the top five of ethanol export markets. So maybe not a game changer, but definitely additive and definitely positive to the U.S. balance sheet.
So overall, how's the performance of U.S. corn export sales this marketing year in both volume and value? And you can delineate that from existing customers or from new opportunities that we're seeing.
Right. Well, volume is down. We just 2 years ago we exported a record nearly 70 million tons, and then on the heels of that exported 62 million tons, and then this year, you know, I think it's going to be around 45 million tons. I think is kind of the latest figures that we're looking at, and so it's certainly a down year. You can contribute that to a lot of things, tighter stocks. You know, high water levels in the Mississippi, as we were right in the middle of our harvest glut that didn't allow us to get all the corn out that we were needed. So that's really hurt this year. And in the meantime, Brazil's had a monster crop, and they're getting into a very big crop right now. So it's going to continue to be a difficult year throughout the rest of 2023, I think.
Did we lose export sales because of low water in the Mississippi? And if we did, have we been able to make it back up?
We did lose some sales in Q4 of last year and Q1 of this year, when we had the issues with the water levels, when barge freight was either at historic highs or near historic highs, and we just haven't been able to make it up so far this year. There's cheap supplies on the world market, and it's been a difficult run this crop year.
Will the performance of the U.S. economy, the performance of the global economy, high interest rates and inflation have been the story. Is this affecting the global ag trade that you have opportunity to work in?
You know, I've got to think that it is. You know, it's difficult out there, difficult to get financing. You know, we have high rates here in the United States, but you go to other countries that are not as affluent as the United States, and their rates are even higher. So export financing is a big issue these days, and I think it'll continue to be as long as we see these inflationary issues and interest rate issues remaining high.
Ryan, from another angle, what's the demand story from Latin America? Because it appears that had been a positive opportunity and a good customer in the past.
Right. So when you look at Latin America, Colombia is really our top customer there, and demand remains strong there in Colombia. It's a market that can ship to easily. But again, we've got to look out for that competition coming from South America. If you look a little bit further north to Central America, those countries combined, I think, in the last couple of years, if you combine the Central American companies, they're around, number four. They would be a number four of our export markets. So that's important, especially Guatemala. I think Guatemala is the biggest one that's taken our corn in Central America, and followed by Costa Rica. So we expect that demand to continue as long as we're able to get in there competitively.
One of the stories that has come lately in the feed grain area has been that of wheat, and from Russia, large volumes being offered at low prices. Is the wheat trade from Russia having an impact in the feed grain demand of the world?
I've got to think it is. You know, folks are always going to look for substitutions anytime that they can get a better deal. They're going to switch from corn over to wheat if they're able to do that. That's not usually a reality here in the United States, but in other countries it is. And so we've seen some of that substitution.
Is feed wheat a threat to corn exports in China? I mean, we already have real competition coming, as you mentioned, from the large Brazilian supply. but are they showing a tendency to move wheat into the feed ration?
That's always a possibility. We're hearing reports of you know, large swaths of Chinese wheat production being flooded right now, so that'll be something to watch and how much wheat they have available. You know, relations are thawing between Australia and China as well. And so if they could start importing more wheat from Australia, where they've kind of had a you know, bump in the road in their relations recently, that seems to be getting better. So that's certainly something they'll be looking at.
How is China's relationship with Brazil, and is that a concern for the U.S. feed grain industry?
I think it's becoming pretty close. President Lula, after taking office earlier this year, led a delegation of 200-plus business leaders to China, and a lot of those were ag business leaders. And so, you know, they've been out there practicing what I call diplomacy through trade and agriculture. And Lula leading a mission like this sends a signal that China is very important to them, and they're going to continue trying to get closer to them.
So with Argentina, a devastating drought, and their production is down for both corn and for soy, is that an opportunity for U.S., or is the Brazil going to fill that gap?
I think it could be an opportunity, but Brazil's just so much cheaper right now. You know, Southeast Asia, they really like that Argentine corn. And so potential opportunities again, but again, we've got to get back to a stage where we're competitive, and we're seeing Brazilian corn out there just, you know, $30 to $40 a ton cheaper than what we can offer right now.
A lot of uncertainty remains in the Black Sea region with Russia's aggression on Ukraine, and even some stories this past week of a dam being breached and the hardships that's bringing on the Ukrainian people. How is the Black Sea supply and the questions of getting that product out through the Black Sea Grain Initiative, through the deal there? How is this affecting the global market and affecting U.S. Corn farmers?
Well, it certainly had an effect. At the start of the invasion, there was virtually, you know, almost nothing going out. Everything that they shipped was over rail and over land to their neighboring countries because the ports in the Black Sea were closed. And then the UN brokered deal came, and they were able to start shipping vessels out of the Black Sea, mainly out of Odessa once again. And that's really alleviated some problems, but I think they're only getting about 70% of total exports out when compared to pre-invasion times. So it's still having an effect, and we don't know what's going to happen with that deal going forward. Putin likes to tease that he may or may not renew it. He's kind of saying the similar things about the next renewal date, that he's not going to renew it. You've got neighboring countries starting to put bans on Ukrainian exports of grains to their countries because it's flooding their markets. So it's causing real havoc throughout the world.
Well, it's one thing for them to have an extension of the agreement. It's another to inspect the vessels. And I understand that while they said yes to the Black Sea Grain Initiative, the number of ships that are being inspected either in or out has certainly been backlogged.
It has. I think they certainly cherry pick and you know, give preference to Russian vessels and are slow on inspecting Ukrainian vessels and don't really expect that to change.
The Biden administration now is pursuing a dispute settlement and the process under USMCA with Mexico. What are your thoughts about the time that it's taken to come to this point?
We're not looking back. We are happy to be where we are right now. USTR has filed for dispute settlement consultations with Mexico, and we're hopeful for what's to come. We think the United States has a very strong case. When Mexico signed USMCA, they agreed to undertake scientific practices when making decisions around biotech. They have not done that. The Mexican president's decree does not list any scientific means to come to that decision, and that's what we're looking for. That's what the United States government has asked for, and to date they haven't received it. So we're very happy that they've decided to take the next step in this dispute.
Well, this first was about all GMO corn, and now it's down to white GMO corn. Can we afford to let up in this dispute settlement process?
We can't. It's a slippery slope. You know, we have been talking to USTR and USDA, and they fully agree that corn is corn. Doesn't matter whether it's white or yellow or any other color. We have to treat it the same. And when you look at the white corn exports to Mexico, it's about 5% of the total of what we export. So that's a pretty big chunk. And it's not something that we're going to let go. And other countries are watching, by the way. You know, other countries are watching to see what happens here and you know, maybe thinking about taking their own precautionary principles. And once USTR wins this case, I think that will send a strong message across the world that biotechnology is safe and that our government will defend the agreements that we enter into.
Will the dispute settlement resurface the science of the technologies that U.S. farmers are using? And is that a battle that we can easily win?
I think so. GM crops are proven to be safe. They have been for decades. And I think this will be an opportunity to showcase that.
Is the pushback coming from the food and from the livestock industry in Mexico, or is it just their government?
Pushback is coming from the government. This is a top-down decree. Their president, AMLO, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, he has a personally held idea that GM is not good, that genetically modified crops are not good for human health, and that's why he's written this decree. And he's got backers, a few backers within his government that are helping to push this. But when you talk to industry, they know how mutually beneficial our relationship is. And they know that they need this corn coming from the United States. And so, you know, they would not like to see any sort of, you know, any problems at all with exports to their country.
So if we look at global production of non-GMO corn, there's not enough non-GM in the world to satisfy Mexico's demand if they could buy every kernel.
There's not. And even if there was, the premium would be one that they wouldn't be willing to pay. You're talking about much, much higher prices of the tortilla is what this would translate into, and other foodstuffs. If you move over into the yellow corn, all of a sudden their pork production is going to cost more. Their beef and dairy and bird production is going to go higher as well. So really, when you're dealing with a country like Mexico, they're not going to want to pay the premium that it's going to take to get that GM corn.
So if Mexico were to prevail, who would suffer?
I would say the Mexican population as well as the U.S. farmer, especially the ones that are producing white corn that's dedicated for shipments to Mexico. They're going to be the ones to suffer the most. Mexico's population, 55% of them live at or below the poverty line. And when you take a staple food like the tortilla and run the price up, you know, 15-20%, and it's with people that spend 80% of their income on food, that's a real effect, and it's going to have negative, very negative consequences.
So let's turn the attention to the Farm Bill. Last week, Senator Stabenow said there'll be no money beyond the baseline for the Farm Bill. In fact, if some areas are to see increases, other areas will have to be cut. So in the mission of the U.S. Grains Council, how important are the MAP and FMD funds, and is status quo adequate?
It's not really. The MAP and FMD funds are the lifeblood of our work here at the U.S. Grains Council, and we don't get into the Farm Bill negotiations because that is with Congress, and we do not lobby U.S. Congress. But I'll tell you, these funds are extremely important to us. The MAP fund has been set at $200 million since 2006. It has not been raised once since 2006. And over time, inflation and sequestration has really chipped away at that. And I think what a lot of the cooperators are looking for would be a doubling of the MAP, so another $200 million. And like you said, where's that money going to come from? I think it's going to be difficult. I'm hoping they can find it. But if you look at, you know, in today's dollars, it would take a 50% increase to get back to that $200 million mark that was set back in 2006. So it's needed to continue the export promotion that U.S. Grains Council does and many other cooperators across the country.
Global oilseed market is loathing the opportunity for next-generation biofuels, and it certainly does seem to provide an opportunity for oilseeds. What about corn and corn-based ethanol?
Well, projections are that corn and corn-based ethanol is going to remain flat. And that's what we're looking at. We've seen a big push for this renewable diesel. We think that there's a possibility that we're going to see more soy acres, a lot more soybean meal on the market. But right now, the projections for corn and corn ethanol, corn into ethanol, are flat to slightly declining, I think.
One of the stories that has been not only in the corn farmers' perspective or through the National Corn Growers and others, but also would come from through the Grains Council, is that of new uses. The issue of sustainability from those countries that are looking for plastics that biodegrade, and even fabrics and clothing. I recall the story of polylactic acid at one time seemed to be an opportunity for U.S. corn. So with regard to the sustainability front, both domestically and globally, is this creating new opportunities for starch and other products from corn?
I think it is. I think it's coming. I think one area that we've yet to tap are plant-based chemicals, plant-based solvents, cleaning agents, things like that. That that is really an untapped area for us. We're starting to look at it, and I think the future could be bright there.
Ryan, what are the issues now that your board of directors are looking at, either here in the immediate term or on the horizon for 24 and beyond?
Expanding demand is the key. Where can we find new markets and grow existing markets through commodity corn, sorghum, and barley, or the value-added products like ethanol and distillers grains that we're marketing? We're just looking to expand those markets and look for new ones.
2023 is moving pretty fast, and you're looking at a summer meeting in Canada next month. What will be the highlights of that gathering?
We are. Well, Canada has really taken off in terms of ethanol exports. They've really shot up over the last couple of years as they have developed a low-carbon fuel standard up there in Canada. You've got provinces that are moving to E10 and some that are even looking at E15 blends. So the demand is really robust for ethanol coming out of Canada. Last couple of years, they've been a great customer for our corn and distillers grains as well. And they're always buying some of our barley, too. So lots to talk about up there in Calgary.
All right. Ryan LeGrand, we want to thank you for taking time out of your schedule to be with us on this edition of Open Mic. Ryan, it is Open Mic, and today you get the last word.
Well, I just want to say thank you one more time to USTR and USDA for standing up for the U.S. corn farmer and holding Mexico's feet to the fire on this decree that is not based on sound science, and look forward to U.S. government prevailing in this case.
Our thanks to Ryan LeGrand, President and CEO of the U.S. Grains Council, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Bayer and their vision of health for all, hunger for none. Learn more at Bayer.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Daly.